My guest at this time is Brian Westbury. He's the former chief economist for the Joint Economic Committee in Congress. He's now chief economist at First Trust Advisors in the Chicago area of Illinois. We want to get his thoughts now on the ongoing debates over funding the government and potentially raising the debt ceiling. The government, of course, has been partially shut down since October 1st, and the Treasury Department has said that midnight tomorrow, Wednesday night, is that when the debt ceiling will be reached by our ever-growing debt. And Brian is here to offer his insights on some of the plans being suggested, as well as just how dire these situations are. And, sir, as always, good to have you with us.
Greg, it's always great to be with you.
Well, let's talk briefly about what we're hearing out of the House and Senate. And, of course, these plans are shifting all the time. So at least as of the latest we know, the House is planning to restore government funding and raise the debt limit into early next year. In exchange, they want to have a vote on repealing the medical device tax in Obamacare and apply equal regulations and laws as it relates to Obamacare on members of Congress, no special exemptions or subsidies as opposed to the rest of the country. The Senate wants to give the unions a little bit of a break when it comes to Obamacare, and both sides seem to want to means test essentially for subsidies in the president's health care law as well. So what are your thoughts on generally two plans that aren't that far apart?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's important to realize that they are negotiating after all. And I think that was the intent of using the debt ceiling and the government shutdown to have a conversation about this. And the real reason I think that all of this is happening is because the United States is on an unsustainable path. I believe the economy right now for the next 1, 3, 5, maybe even 7, 8 years would be okay. We could sustain the deficits that we have. We could operate. We would grow relatively slowly and have a higher unemployment rate than we would normally, basically because of the size of the government and the deficits. But we would grow. We would be okay. But it's the real problem comes 10, 15 years from now. Everyone in Washington knows this. And I think there's just been some members of Congress elected who want to deal with this now. And that's, we always call it the third rail of politics, right? Why deal with something if it doesn't matter for my election in 2 years? So that's the whole reason we're having all of this. I think of it as a private sector guy. The question is, do we want to jump out of a two-story building today or wait and jump out of a 10-story building 10, 15 years from now?
Do you get the sense that there's enough folks on either side of the aisle, or perhaps even both sides of the aisle, to move in the direction that you think is necessary in order to avoid calamities a decade or more down the road? And what specifically do they need to get behind?
You know, it's interesting because I suppose if you put everything up for a vote today, an equal vote, what we call a clean increase in the debt ceiling, a clean budget that doesn't change anything, it would probably pass. But even that's some kind of a question, because there's many Democrats that are in red states that are scared of even voting for that. But it would probably pass because the sitting Congress doesn't want to mess with things if they don't see dire consequences. So the point I'm getting to here is that it's kind of interesting that there's a small group that's willing to use the debt ceiling, government shutdown, to try and change the course. And I'm looking at this from the private sector. I'm not running for office. I believe this is all fair and game, that if you watch a football game, they do fake punts and fake field goals all the time. So, you know, that's not a normal part of the game, but every once in a while it makes sense. And I think right now it does make sense. And this, you know, we have some history in the United States. Back in the late 70s, 1979, Jimmy Carter, President Carter, appointed Paul Volcker to run the Federal Reserve, and he jacked up interest rates to 20% to break the back of inflation. And the cost of that was two nasty recessions. But once those recessions were over, the United States went on a tear. We had a boom in the 1980s. So this idea of cutting things or using chemotherapy to cure the cancer, it's not out of the ordinary. We've done it before in the United States, and I think that's what these this relatively small minority is trying to do today.
Let's talk about the issue of default. The president says we've never defaulted, and America is on the brink of that if Republicans in Congress, as he says it, don't start to see things more his way. Both sides say that they don't want that to happen. Others say that it wouldn't be good if we didn't raise the debt ceiling, but wouldn't actually default because defaulting means we can't pay the interest on the debt, and we would have the tax revenue coming in to do that as well as some other essential government services. The counter to that, of course, is that even though we wouldn't technically default, world markets would go into a panic. So what's your assessment of all that?
Sure. And so remember here, I'm in the money management business. I have lots of clients with assets invested. And so I'm very, I guess, worried about this, if there was something to worry about. But the United States will not actually default, and I call a default not paying the interest or the principal on debt, because we have more than enough tax revenue. In fact, it's 10, 12 times the coverage of our debt. What would happen is that we would, if we're not allowed to borrow, we would not be able to pay all of our bills, whether it's the Department of Agriculture or the Department of Commerce or possibly even a Social Security check or Medicare payment to a hospital. And so it all depends on how they prioritize payments, what they decide to keep open and what they don't. And, I guess the point there is that we wouldn't default. And if we put ourselves on a path toward a balanced budget, I think markets would be okay. There would definitely be pain. There would be $600 billion less in government spending, but that would also be $600 billion we were not borrowing from the private sector, from the Chinese, and that $600 billion would have to be used for something else. So if the Chinese were not buying our treasury bonds, they would have to buy corporate bonds or stocks, or they would buy oil, or they would buy something else from us. And so it's not a net loss completely. It would cause mayhem. There would be orange cones up on the highways that nobody would be there to take down for a while until we figured it all out. But I do not believe it would cause a financial catastrophe for the world. I think that's a red herring. I think it's propaganda to bring people to the negotiating table.
We mentioned before that Brian is a former chief economist for the Joint Economic Committee of Congress. What I did not mention, that he was in that role in the 1995-1996 session, which is the last time we had this partial government shutdown. And of course, Brian, you hear every time there's a major clash over budgeting or some other major issue on Capitol Hill, this is the most acrimonious that it's ever been in since the Civil War, since Watergate, right, or something like that. Compare, if you can, based on what you know of the inner workings this time around, to what you saw firsthand almost two decades ago.
Yeah, in 1995-96, the government was shut down this partial shutdown where the non-essential employees were sent home. By the way, they all get paid eventually, and so that's why it doesn't hurt the economy as much as many people think, because people live out of their savings realizing they will get paid back. But it was acrimonious then. It was very damaging. One thing to remember is that the only cable news network at that time was CNN. We now have Fox News. That was started in the middle of 1996. There's also a very big internet presence and Twitter. And so as a result, the news that gets out is kind of all across the political spectrum rather than focused in one area. And I think that makes this a different kind of battle than we had back then. And I think that's one of the reasons it's dragging out more. There's not what I would call a one-sided coverage of the issue. So what's fascinating is that both sides learn from that battle. They're both taking the political points that they learned into this battle. And, this could drag on for a little while longer. And one thing also to remember, Greg, is that is that, yes, October 17th is the deadline, but there's enough cash on the government's balance sheet. We've taken in tax revenue in the past few weeks that's pretty big. And so we can carry this on until at least November without missing any bills. So the bottom line is that it's not October 17th when everybody turns into a pumpkin. We do have some maneuvering room here until the early part of November. So I think markets are going to be okay. If you look at the bond market, if you look at the stock market, they've been relatively calm in the last couple of weeks. And I think that's because people, not just because they expect something to happen, that an agreement to be made, but also because they realize that we won't really default on our debt.
Last 60 seconds, Brian. The 1995-96 shutdown featured, obviously, a Republican side of that debate that had just come in the Republican Revolution. This side, of course, has the Tea Partiers that came in about 2010. What similarities and differences between those two Republican insurgencies?
What's interesting back then is that when all of that happened in 95, just we need to remember the environment. The unemployment rate back then was only 5.6%. I wish it was 3, but it was only 5.6. Today it's 7.6. Government spending back then was a little less than 20% of GDP. Today it's well over 20% of GDP. And not only that, these Tea Party members, they're mad at Republicans, too. It's not just Democrats. They're mad at Republicans because the last time the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House back in between 2003 and 2007, they put in new government programs, and they ran up the deficit, Medicare Part D, the prescription drug coverage, No Child Left Behind. We eventually ended up with TARP. All of those things, that's the reason for the Tea Party. So there's this third group there now, which makes this even more complicated, and they're willing, what they're basically saying is, it's better to jump out of a two-story window today than wait and jump out of a 10-story window later on. If the Tea Party would have gone into Detroit 15 years ago, they wouldn't be bankrupt today. It would have hurt, because they wouldn't have been able to borrow back then 15 years ago, but Detroit would have never gone bankrupt, which we saw this past year. So that's what they're saying. They're saying, we want to stop this now. This is the time. Let's do it. And that's how the battle lines are being drawn.
Fascinating stuff. Brian, great to have your insights. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Brian Westbury, former chief economist for the Joint Economic Committee of Congress, 1995 and 96. Currently chief economist at First Trust Advisors outside Chicago, Illinois. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.